All right, I'm about to hit this start broadcast button. Well, I got more.
Okay.
All right, well, we're live. What's going on, everybody? This is Gil Laurie from the Onyx Truth. You are watching the Onyx Truth Live, episode number 9. And I'm joined by my guest, my host, co-host, GR GX. Hey, what's up, GR? And then we had the token white guy. He faded out. Hopefully we'll come back in. And we got a special guest by the name of comedian Andre Ruboy Ferrell. Go ahead and tell everybody who you are, what you do, and all that great stuff.
What's going on, comedian? Actually, darn. Yeah, cold on the side. They midgets, though, so... I get past price discounts for them. Nah, but man, I'm a joker, man. I like to do
So, yeah, so back in the day, me and Andre used to work together. He was like, everybody got that class clown. He was like the office clown, man. Like, I was telling him off air, I never honestly envisioned him becoming a stand-up comedian. You know, in essence, I mean, he was always funny. I just didn't. It was just never a thought that crossed my mind that a few years later he would be getting his joke on and still being in the military at the same damn time. So for those of you out there who've never been in the military before, it is a very demanding job, and they don't really allow you to have too many freedoms, I guess you could say. But somehow he's managed to do that and start a career as a stand-up comedian. So go ahead and tell us about all that, man. How did you actually transition from full-time, 100% soldier to a stand-up comedian?
I still do, I cut back from full-time soldier, and I'm a soldier. What's my workout? 06 to 14:30. So from 06 to 14:30, I'll be F. Sergeant Ferrell. Then after that, it's comedian all the way, man. But, man, I get started, man. I started about 3 years ago, as a matter of fact. I went to an open mic, and my homeboy, he was performing, and nobody was making me laugh. He was like, man, you should do this, man. You know, it's funny, it's silly, we do all that, man. You should go ahead and do this. Like, I'm like, nah. Because, just getting up on stage, being on stage in front of people is totally different.
Yeah.
There's a one dude, he said this one joke, and I'm like, oh, hell no. I'm getting up there. So, like, I wrote me out about 5 minutes worth of material or whatever, and went up there, a couple weeks later, killed it. They're like, I got off stage. They were like, man, how long you doing a little comedy? I'm like, this is my first time. They're like, man, we can't tell. But I can. Like, if I look at myself from where I'm at now to where I started, I can tell I suck.
So what is the actual, I've heard people say that being a comedian is probably one of the toughest jobs that a person could ever do. So what is the actual creative process for constructing a joke in order to make people laugh? I mean, that's got to be extremely complicated. Besides just somebody just standing up just telling some random ass jokes, and now you got to actually give a performance on stage and flow with it. How does that actually work?
My thing is, I talk about what I know. I talk about the art. I talk about being a father. I talk about just crazy stuff that was happening. Joke writing and everything. Yeah, that's actually. It's like a chemistry. It's a science. You gotta get that stuff down packed. Like the basic joke, it has an opening and stuff and a punchline. Once you learn that, once you learn all the formulas and everything else, that just starts, man. And I'm a writer, man. I write a lot of stuff. When I'm shooting my DVD comes out spring 2015. And you when y'all get it, I'll send you a free copy. You gotta pay the shit to handle. So, you can tell people how they write, man. How the everything just flows.
I don't know, man. That just sounds like some scary stuff. I think about that Will Smith episode from The Fresh Prince where he went on stage. stage to tell the jokes, and we thought he was the shit, and then his joke ended up sucking ass later on, man. That's kind of what goes through my head when you're telling me about that, man.
Man, it's a process, man. You got to, like, you got to know your audience. Like, you got to, hopefully they can relate to what you're saying and everything else, man. I start when I come out, man. I like to, I'm high end. I need everything to make people laugh and everything else. But funny is funny, no matter what. Funny is funny. And, like, I'm learned, like, you got different types of comedy. You got the mainstream comedy. You know, that's mostly, like, the mixed rooms and everything else. And then you got the black circuit.
What is it, like, what do they call it, like the chilling circuit or something?
Nah, man, that's the, you know, hard ghetto black rooms where, you know, they like nigga and dick jokes and all that. This is like the ignorant shit. Like, well, I was fucking with this bitch, and then, you know, she was a fat bitch, and I fucked her, and then cookie crumb came out of her ass. Like, you know, dumb shit like that, man.
What the hell?
They had the foot bottom shoes, man. I'm like, no, I couldn't do that. I would be like, But think about it. I probably would have had to keep on the dress shoes because they was kicking German Shepherds and shit.
Man,
you gotta get your J's messed up kicking a German Shepherd for sure.
That's funny, man. I remember I was in Afghanistan, and you've been to Afghanistan before, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so you know how rocky it is and how messed up terrain is. So I remember I seen some the Afghan army, they were outside doing PT. And you, I kid you not, man, these jokers were outside doing PT in their uniform with some goddamn dress shoes on, dude. You know how tough your feet got to be to do some a hard workout of some dress shoes, dude.
So you just see that, man. Ain't no way we did that. I mean, I was a sailor. We didn't do PT anyway. You know how long the longest ship in the Navy is 1,126 feet. If you got to run farther than that, you're in trouble.
Little Bill trying to touch her. Like,
on with the Cosby chips too, man.
I'm gonna try to get her.
So how does that make you feel, being that Bill Cosby is like, well, you know, he's like one of the most respected black comedians of all time. So how does that make you feel as a comedian on the come up?
Man, I think this is what I think happened. You know, they saw Bill Cosby, and then Bill, they was like, I want to get in the limelight. And Bill was like, well, I can take you there, but now you got to start this Twitter problem. Oh. So, you know, they gave him songs, and then, you know, he didn't come through on his word, and then they just got mad. But that's just me. Business.
But, like, I think that the fact that they weren't, you know, running in the same circles, it would make it easier for them not to come out. People don't normally come out when they think it's just them that this happened to. Sometimes they're even in denial that they were raped to begin with. They're like, oh, well, that was fucked up, but...
Okay. I think he was just, I don't think he raped them. I think he was getting pussy on the side. Yeah, I think he was getting pussy on the side. Yeah. But if you listen to some of these stories, like, they were like, oh, he made me drink it. Nobody can't make you drink nothing unless he put a gun in your head and said, bitch, drink this, I'm going to give you a pudding bottle. Something like that. But I don't think that happened. And if it happened more than one time, when are you going to be like, no, I'm not fucking coming to see you, Bill, because every time I come, I drink this tonic, then I wake up, my butt hurt. Like, when... my butt hurt, everything happened. Like, when is it on you to say, okay, I think he's doing something to me, if that's the case?
That wasn't all of them, though. Like, all of them didn't happen quite the same way. I mean, there were some variations between them. Now, I do find it a little weird that somebody would go back having some kind of clue that something happened. Fair enough. It can happen, though. I can understand. No one is psychology behind it. I can understand why somebody might. But on the same token, it's like, okay, why would you go back? Some of the other stories made perfect sense, so, like... People trust people. And it's not, people go, well, why would he need to drug anybody? He was doing high, he could get pussy. Like, when you do that kind of thing, it's not about pussy at that point. It's about power.
Like, yeah, that's why they say rape is not about being gay or straight. It's about dominance.
Yeah, like, people just like that weird, like, dominating somebody, even if somebody's like, Bill, take me.
Hey, we got a call. Let's take this call real quick. Hey, call from 678. What's your name and where are you from?
This is Fatima.
Fatima.
Fatima or Fatima?
Yes, sir.
Say that again?
Yes, Fatima.
Fatima.
Yeah, what's on your mind, man?
It's echoing. Did somebody else got their phone on?
Anybody got their phones on but you.
I can't.
I don't know
what's going on right now.
I don't know either. Let me play with these phones real quick while I whisper in her ear. What's
going on? Oh, I hadn't pressed one. I had just called in because I was trying to get on the computer. And it wasn't.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what the deal is. Hey, try to call us back and see if we can fix the problem.
Okay.
All right. All right. So y'all said y'all couldn't hear?
No, I didn't even know anybody was on the phone. Yeah.
I can sort of hear it a little bitty bit.
Man, that's like fast right there.
I'm about to put my ear to the camera like, what the hell?
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
Man, sometimes man, these little systems be acting janky as hell. I don't know why they be. It's like every week they be doing some bullshit.
It's
like,
a man.
Huh?
It's a man.
I be mad if it's up. Here she back. All right, can y'all hear it now? 678. Can we hear you now?
Hello.
Barely hear 678. Y'all hear?
Barely.
I think her call is dropped. I don't know what the girl says. But anyway, let's go on, man. So we got this new show that's out there called Empire, right? I know you have y'all guys seen the show yet?
Yeah.
So,
I haven't got to see it yet. I've been meaning to, but I'm one of those people who can't watch just one episode. I like to let the episode build up and watch them back to back. So.
A binge watcher. That's what they call them. You a binge watcher.
I
see it. So am I the only person that's seen the show? Who else saw it?
I seen it last night.
So what do you think about that show, man? Because I'm hearing a lot of mixed reviews about this show.
Well, I knew it was Terrence Howard, and I knew he was gonna cry, and he had already cried in like all three of the episodes. So I really wasn't expecting much.
Man, you know, I don't know, man. I watched. Have you guys heard of a guy named Dr. Boyce Watkins?
Yeah.
He has a website. What is it? Your World, Your Black World, or something like that. And he was talking about basically comparing this to like a minstrel show. You know, they got all the classic elements of a gay black male, a successful black male with a white woman, a thug becoming a superstar music producer, and you know, a wife named Cookie, and they got like all these classical elements of, I guess you could say, stereotypical black society. And here it is, black America just flocking to this TV show because I guess we're like addicted to ratchetness, I guess you could say. I mean, how do y'all feel about that?
I think they are addicted. They are addicted to ratchetness, man. I mean, well, not all black people, but you know, you got that genre over there that's addicted to ratchetness. Like how many females are addicted to scandal?
Talking about when the Fugees were first signed, on their first album, their producer kept telling them, we need to gangster it up. We need to ghetto it up. We need more rap about guns and violence and drugs. And not about to say it turned out their second album when they told their producer to, you know, to get fucked. That was when they told their real story, that's when people were popular. And I think that's the point that Dr. Watkins is trying to make, is that if you want to make real art with real black folks, that people will buy it. You don't have to package the shucking and jiving and sell it to white folks for it to be, you know, marketable in the mainstream. And I hope that's what he means, because I think that's a pretty good message.
My thing is, should I just not like something because there may be some white folks? So like people have, this is essentially a soap opera from what I'm understanding.
Yeah.
People of all women, especially of all colors, like soap operas. That's just how it is. So if you add the color of black to it, it's going to say ratchet. But if you add the color of white to it, it's just a regular ass soap opera. So it's like, yeah, I want to see more
where but you say what you want on your record, Lil Wayne, but you are a millionaire, and you do not go back to your ghetto hood and sling dope in the evenings when you are not recording records. And you should not mislead people. You don't. There's no way, man. If Lil Wayne went back to his hood right now, somebody would cap him and take his rims, dude. Tell me they would. And that's where people buy that, man. People buy that stuff and they believe that that's reality. I assure you, Dr. Dre is a billionaire, okay? This is not reality. But, people, especially young, impressionable people, buy this story every day of this is what it's like in my life. And if you want to be like me, this is how you're going to make it. But the truth is that Dr. Dre didn't make $1 billion by riding around in Impalas and kicking it in the hood. He got his ass in the lab and made a bunch of really good records. And he worked hard. And that's what the reality is. Whatever he says on the record, what really happened is that he worked hard. Yeah. However you want, and that's where we don't make that distinction, and then people think that you're going to get out there and be like Dr. Dre by doing the things he says on the record. Right. And it's just, that's the disconnect in today's society.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say something about. You hit it on the head right there. Because, it's glamorized so much. A lot of stuff is glamorized. Like, that's why you have a lot of motherfuckers out here cheating. What are they talking about? Yeah, I got a side. My bitch, my girl got a girlfriend and all this other stuff. It ain't cool to be with one chick. I guess that's why. Wait, put your hand. Oh, angry black woman. We don't see that type of stuff no more, like on TV. We don't see the one guy that's married and held down and everything else, So, what can I say? Or you always see somebody talking about some turn up. No, motherfucker, turn down. You don't have a job. Why the fuck are you turning up anyway?
What are you turning up with?
But what actually changed that, though? Because, you take it back to the 80s, we had the Cosby Show. What else was popping in the 80s back then?
Yeah, Cosby Show.
And some other stuff, man. Then we hit the 90s with the Fresh Prince, and then I guess you could say Martin to a certain extent, but what actually changed, man?
Family Matters.
Family Matters, yeah.
Family right there,
I was watching the Whitney Houston movie the other day, and then they did the
little... About that.
Oh.
If I ever have a movie, I want Drake to play me. I want the light skin of this motherfucker to play me, because that nigga did not look nothing like Bobby Brown.
Well, they did a better casting job than that Aaliyah movie, from what I heard.
Yeah,
the chick that played
Whitney Houston, she
was similar to her, but that Leah movie was complete and utter just was fuckery. I'm flipping through the TV and stop on the Bobby Brown, the Whitney Houston story. I'm like, when did G Money from New Jack City start winning?
Going to need some work. Struggling that. Hey, you laughing. You a comedian now. You might have to go down that path. But what I was saying is I saw that, and then they had the little Bobby Brown special on. And then somebody, I can't remember who it was, but I don't know if I read it, but somebody said that all these ratchet reality TV shows kind of spawn off of that reality TV show that Bobby Brown started. Like, that's when reality TV started really getting out of control, as if Bobby Brown birthed this shit. You know what I'm saying? With his reality TV show. Y'all remember that shit, being Bobby Brown?
Especially the white reality TV show.
But they don't look at it like that. When it comes to the white reality TV shows and they're doing rap shit. Like, what was the most infamous one? Jackass. They don't. That shit was pure comedy for them. You know what I mean? That shit was kind of funny telling that shit.
It's because whenever something happens, you know, there's a phenomenon, if you will, and the white half of America, and black folks, we have to come out with our black version of it. And if it's comparable, it's going to be considered ratchet. Whereas it's like, when you look at it, it's all white people. It's like, oh, that's crazy. Oh, my gosh. And you look at Love & Hip Hop, it's like,
They had to give it to the black people. It's all because if you James Burger had the most white people, oh damn, fucking fighting for no reason.
But that's where Ratchet started with Jerry Springer.
Remember Ricky Lake used to have her fight?
I really believe the beginning of Ratchetness on television started with them daytime talk shows, man. I really believe that. Jerry Springer was so bad that the security guard got famous. He got his own show. Steve got his own show.
He did.
Steve Wilkos got his own show, and he got his claim famous. He broke up the fights on Jerry Springer. Are you serious? That's how you get famous in America today? Break up the fights on Jerry Springer. They get you a TV show. You know, that's... America is intellectually lazy, and that's not black America, not white America, what's Barack say, not red America, not blue America, all America.
Bars.
I'm going to shout out to Barack's tan suit. Did y'all see that? Where the white guy got the tan suit? Yeah, he's like, yeah, suck on my tan suit. Yeah, hey, I loved it.
What are you talking about?
You remember last summer? The white guy trolled all of America. Remember last summer when they got on Obama for wearing the tan suit to the meeting and they said, like, it ain't presidential to be wearing
Yeah.
Before the State of the Union address, the White House staff, they tweeted presidents getting ready for the State of the Union speech, and they sent a picture of the tan suit. The president has no fucks left to give.
he really doesn't.
No, not really. Not after the. I want both of them.
That's why I like him. My president.
Yeah.
And he was the best of them. And that's why I do him.
Andre, so what do you think of the president's comedic skills, man?
We got a writer. Somebody write that for him. But you know, he can write or he performs it. He pulls it off well.
Delivery. I'm delivering
and timing, and he got.
Well, I like the
president. Man, I'm waiting for him just to really just go the fuck off. Like, look, motherfucker. This is how shit's gonna be, guys.
Listen, you know what? I like how they talk about how the president didn't get the African American experience. Man, let me tell you, I watched the Kennedy Center honors the other day, and they honored Al Green. Dude, the president knew all the words to the Al Green songs. Tell me he ain't really black. Come on, man.
Y'all didn't see him in that locker room after that game. I forgot which game it was. And he did the brother cup. He was a basketball player.
The brother cup, that's like the whitest description I've ever heard. Two black men ripping each other up. The brother cup.
The dap, man, the two taps on the back.
If you catch him
in an unguarded moment, man, I think this is sad that the president has to act white, if you will, around the cameras, man. Because if you catch him when nobody's looking, he's a soul shaking, you know, laughing, smiling. He's every black dude I've ever been friends with.
He's a Negro.
Yeah, when the cameras, you know, when he don't think the cameras are looking, but when the cameras are looking, he's got to act like the president, you know. And I think it's sad that the man can't be who he is, because he ain't that. You can just tell by looking at him, he ain't that guy.
I know he got bucked with somebody. I know somebody came, well, they're probably in the situation room. They probably said something real stupid to him. He's like, man, shut your dumb ass up. I know it happened, man.
Yeah. Oh, it has to. And he's married to Michelle, and you know she ain't playing. Yeah. Can we get a moment of appreciation for Ms. Obama?
I love Mrs. Obama.
That is one classy, beautiful, wonderful woman. I think the world of Mrs. Obama.
Call him this month, the character,
that's them, man. People don't know that they're younger than the people who criticize them, they're just plain cooler. You know, I don't have a problem with that.
She brought the black female back because her hair always done. Because Condoleezza, that motherfucker, her hair was always goddamn nappy. I'm like, goddamn, did you know what a fine man? Dawson loves it.
Because I know better than to comment on a black woman's hair.
Congolese.
That sounds like a sex act or something.
was always, I could just picture George W. saying, man, I like black people. I got two of them in my cabinet.
Literally.
He probably did say that shit.
I bet he did.
That's why he did.
That's why Colin Powell quit, dude. He's like, I ain't being nobody soaking.
Hey, so how's it out there on the comedy tour, man? I mean, as far as you being a black dude, I mean, have you played any traditional white spots, I guess you could say, where it's just mainly white audiences, and how do they react to it?
I have. They love it. But like I said, comedy is comedy.
Yeah.
So I can go to an all-white room and kill it. I can go to an all-black room and kill it. But I like mixed crowds. You know?
Now, you know what I noticed with comedians of different races that play in front of different crowds? Like, say you got a black guy. Now, I watch a lot of Comedy Central. Say you got a black guy that's doing stand-up in front of a predominantly white group. I'll notice that a lot of the black comedians, they will tailor their comedy towards, I guess, cracking on white people all the time. You know what I'm saying? And then, so if you got white people playing, like, take Gary Owens, whatever his name is, and he's performing in front of a bunch of black people, they'll tailor their comedy towards cracking on white people. You know what I'm saying? I mean, what is the, why is that so popular in the comedy world?
But making fun of white people?
No, I mean, just not necessarily making fun of white people, but when a comedian is playing in front of a crowd of mainly a different race, you know, they tend to focus, from what I noticed, they tend to focus a lot of the jokes on mainly cracking on white folks, you know what I mean?
On white people.
Now, let me see. Have I done this? Yes. I was, like, sort of addressing the elephant in the room. Like, if I'm on stage and there's a lot of white people, I'm like, God damn, I ain't seen this many white people stop me in court or something like that. You know, I'm breaking the ice. You know, my whole bit ain't gonna be about you know, in a black neighborhood, you know, ain't no banks. You just check cash in places. That's when I knew this was a nice neighborhood because it was all banks and everything else. There was no liquor stores or no check cash places. But that's not me. Like, I'll do it to break the ice, or like, if I'm
when you're out there performing. Because, you know, Kevin Hart is like the dominant comedian these days. I wonder if, like, these white folks, they're looking at you, because, you know, you're a dark-skinned brother as well. I wonder if they're looking at you like, you know, is he going to be the next Kevin Hart? Make me laugh like Kevin Hart. You know what I'm saying? Do you kind of get that vibe from them, like they're, I guess, comparing you to Kevin Hart or something like that?
Once again, when I get on with that, I tell them, whatever you think, lower your expectations, because it's not No, so you know what? We have different styles of comedy. I'm not Kevin Hart. I don't want to be Kevin Hart. Do I want to be famous like Kevin Hart? Yeah, but you know, me and Kevin Hart talking about two totally different things. So, you know, why are you laughing at me, man?
Hello, man. I was just thinking that it just occurred to me a joke. We was talking about making fun of white people. I once heard Louis C.K. say one time that you can make fun of white people as a comedian because, like, I mean, you know, so what? You're white. They're white. You know, what, oh, man, he called me a cracker. Fucked up my day. You know? You know? What's the worst thing you can do? What's the worst thing you can say to a white person? Right? You know? I mean, I know what a white privilege is. You can call me whatever you want. I'm still white, dude. And that's why you can make fun of white people. And don't get me wrong. I'm decrying that it's like that in the world. But that's the truth. You can make fun of white people because we don't give a shit. That's white privilege. You want to know? You want the white privilege or another shit? You call me whatever you want. That's white privilege.
But I try and be totally different with my comedy.
Yeah.
I don't talk about the dick jokes and
dick jokes and masturbation and
I tell you what. And I wish I could remember this cat's name. One of the funniest things I ever saw was this comedian. He got up on online might be the Def Comedy Jam, dude. It was a white dude. And he, the first thing he said on stage is, I'm married to a white woman. He said, so y'all just gonna have to listen to this. And he got up and he got on black people for about 20 minutes, dude. And I mean, everybody in the room, all the black people in the room, he was talking about going to black people church, dude. And he said, I didn't even know about black people church, dude. He said, white people church. 45 minutes, dude. He said, man, we went, he said, I thought we was done, dude. We broke for lunch and come back from more church, dude. And he said, I mean, he is going on, dude. And I mean, he is just killing it. And I mean, everybody's falling off the
church. I think that was Gary Owen who told that church joke.
Yeah.
Right there.
And he's talking about it, and he's like, yeah, y'all, he said, y'all call me what you want. I'm married to a black woman, so I'm going to clown everybody, and I'm going to take my pass. And I mean, he's funny.
Yeah, that's Gary Owen.
He's really funny.
You know, Gary Owen, he was actually, he won an award. I believe I can space you out, man, because he used to be in the military as well. But he won an award for being the funniest black comedian in America. Can you imagine that, a white dude winning an award for being the funniest black comedian in America?
Can we call
it
the Eminem
Awards? That's crazy, man. That is crazy. So what do you got? So what are your expectations? I mean, are you trying to? Shit, I don't know. What are the damn goals for a comedian besides to become the next? Not the next Eddie Murphy, but as large as Eddie Murphy and Kevin Hart. Like, what are you trying to do?
Travel. I love making people laugh. That's what I would love to do. I love to make people laugh, man. And, like, even just me, it's when I'm telling jokes and getting that laugh and everything else, man, when I get off stage and have somebody come to me and tell me I needed that laugh, like, I had crazy stuff going on at home. But for this 45 minutes or this 30 minutes or this 20 minutes you were on stage, you took me away from that. Like, I need that. That makes me feel good. You know, so get from it. I just want to be able to continue to travel, you know, get my name out there, you know, maybe get a movie or something. You know, I already got one TV credit, but I'm on like a movie or something, you know, my own little special. And that's about it, man. I just want to make a little bit of money, you know, so I enjoy making people laugh.
Do they pay well for being a comedian at your level, or how does it go?
But where I'm at now, it pays, but it pays, but it don't pay. I'm still a baby in the game, man. I'm only 3 years in. Yeah, you got people who've been doing it for 10+ years and everything else, man. You know, they the ones that make money. I can do what, 35 minutes in charge, maybe $100-something, $200. But once you get on TV, and people know you and everything, it's name your price. But comedy club, playing the comedy club is where it's at, man. Because you're doing 5-6 shows, you know, for that whole weekend, playing that whole weekend, man, you can walk out with a couple $1,000, man.
So how often do comedians, like, how often do you guys have to come up with new material? Because, you know, sometimes you'll see a comedian in one club, they'll use whatever material, and one, like, say in New York, they'll use whatever material up here, and then say they go down to Texas or something, they'll use that same material down there. How often can you use the same material before you have to come up with something fresh and new?
Well, see, what a lot of people don't know is that comedy is repetitive. Like, you saying the same thing night in and night out. Like, there's different levels to where you wanna get to. Like, if you wanna host, you wanna be a host, you wanna be a comedian, hosting requires 10 minutes, you know, but you wanna have 20 minutes of material just in case, you know, you got a feature comedian and you got the headliner, you know, just in case the feature's running late or somebody's running late, you can stretch your material out. Now, you got your feature. Your feature does 30 minutes. You know, as a feature, you want to have about an hour's worth of material.
Mm.
You know, so you can, just in case the headliner's running late, you can stretch it out or whatever. Then as your headliner, you're doing 45 minutes to an hour, maybe an hour and a half, like Kevin Hart and Eddie Murphy and everybody else. You see, they're doing an hour, nonstop, bam, an hour. So you want It's a process.
It sounds so easy, but then, you know, just, okay, Eddie Murphy, Kevin Hart, whatever, they got an hour and a half working too. But, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, what the hell goes on in the creative process to actually compose an hour to an hour and a half worth of material to where, for one, you got to memorize all that stuff. You got to memorize all that stuff. And then, gosh, man, that's why I just, you know, I love Chris Rock. Chris Rock's one of my favorite comedians. I love watching his shows, man.
He's amazing.
And I sit there and I listen to his comedy. I'm like, God, how does this guy memorize all this stuff? And then it's like he can read the audience and know when to strike with the joke. I mean, you got to have some real fucking skills for that shit.
It's crazy, man, because, like I said, when I first started, I had that first 5 minutes. And everything built up that first 5 minutes. I said that 5 minutes. I did that 5 minutes till I was blue in the face. I did that 5 minutes till I knew that 5 minutes like the back of my hand, where I could take that last joke and put it as my first joke and remix it around and everything else. After I got that base 5 minutes, then I added another 5 minutes. And then I built it on from 5 minutes to increment five and everything else. I got over an hour's worth of material.
So how do you practice that? Are you telling yourself in a mirror, or
are
you just writing, or you go over it in your head? Like, how do you do that?
Like, me, I just wrote a whole, I don't write jokes anymore. I write whole bits. So my bits are like minutes, a couple minutes longer, everything else. But I would do, if I write something, I'm going to an open mic, and I'm going to perform at an open mic and see if it hits. And then if it don't, I'm going to see what did hit and then get my changes like that. Yep, that's the process. And then, you know, you keep what works, make changes there, then perform it again and perform it again and perform it again so you got it perfected.
So,
yes.
let's say you just blow up next week. You become the next hottest comedian in America. Now, you know, there's this old stereotype of myth in black society for black celebrities that they got to throw a dress on. So what are some of the things that, say you become the next, just as big as Kevin Hart next week or something like that, I guess what are some of the things that you are willing to do or you will not do in order to achieve fame and success and money?
Man, I can tell you what I'm going to do. There's a lot of things I won't do.
You going to put the dress on, man?
Well, I'll put a dress on.
You know, that's like a big stereotype saying that, you know, where was you got Martin Lawrence put the dress on. Every black celebrity except for Will Smith and Denzel put the dress on. Like, you know, Tyler Perry.
If the script, if I'm doing a movie and the script is funny, I don't know. That's a good question. If you paying me $10 million, I'm putting the dress on. I don't give a fuck. I'm putting the dress on.
I might badmouth you if you did not put the dress on.
I badmouth myself.
The question is, it funny? Is it funny? If it's funny, put the dress on, man. If it's funny, wear it, man. If it's funny, wear it, you know? It was funny when Martin put the dress on. It was funny when Eddie put the dress on. It was funny.
No, it was funny, but there are those in black America that believe that Hollywood is out to make all black men feminine. You know what I'm saying? And it starts with, I mean, there's like this honest belief. Especially
if you want the money, you got to emasculate yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I was saying, if he ever blows up to be super, super duper popular, you know, I'm like, well, what are the things that you are willing to do and some of the things that you won't? Well, matter of fact, what are the things that you are not willing to do in order to make a name?
I'm not taking nothing for the team. putting the dicks in my face, none of that. None of that going on over here. You're not getting no Illuminati. No. I ain't sacrificing nobody. Don't look like that. Like, if, like, I heard you did a comedy thing, and it wasn't funny. Like, you funny on Instagram. You Instagram and YouTube funny, but you're not.
There's another dude out there from Houston, Texas. His name is King Karan. I don't know if you've heard about him, but he kind of blew up off of Instagram as well, doing his little skits. And, yeah, you know, but what's crazy is, you know, DC, Young Fly, King Karan, they're racking up hundreds of thousands of followers, kicking it with millions. I know King Karan, he be hanging out with Drake and Kevin Hart. Like, it ain't shit, but I'm wondering, how does that actually translate into the real world with these guys? You know, I didn't really think it would, though.
YouTube. And I'm just like, You know, if the president, if the president wanted Shane Dawson to interview him, I'm assuming that, you know, he might have told Shane Dawson, hey, look, you got a presidential interview. But really, he's thinking, man, this guy's got 6 million YouTube followers that I'd like to speak to.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
It's crazy, man. I can't call it. I mean, It seems like the comedy game is kind of going like how the rap game is going. You know, back in the 90s with rap, you know, you had to have some real skills and be able to get on the mic and really do your thing. But then social media came about. Now, anybody can be a rapper. So it's almost kind of like the same thing with comedy to a certain extent where, you know, you just didn't have Eddie Murphy's all over the damn place back in the day. But now anybody, 15 seconds later, I can... Fuck you mean, boy, and all of a sudden I got 2 million followers on Instagram and I'm traveling all over the country, you know what I'm saying? So,
it doesn't really take any talent to come up with 15 seconds out of your day that's funny. Just last night, for the hell of it, I Googled the funniest video on the internet. That was the phrase I Googled. And what it comes up with is a dude standing on a chair and he's got something taped to the ceiling above his ceiling fan. And this dumbass tries to grab the thing through the ceiling fan and gets knocked the fuck out. And he gets up. And, I mean, the guy is totally sincere. He gets up and he's like, maybe I should have went with my first plan. And this is the funniest video on the internet. Come on, you know? And he said, maybe I should have went with my first plan. What was your first plan, dude? You got knocked the fuck out by a ceiling fan.
Okay.
Yeah, I put my elbow down on my mute button. I was so excited. It's not funny, dude. It is not funny to get knocked the fuck out by a ceiling fan. You know, I feel the same way about Jim Carrey. Sometimes he's funny, and sometimes he does Dumb and Dumber. And you know who else I'm going to get on, dude, while we're on the subject of comedians that are not funny? Dude, I don't get America's fascination with Will Ferrell. The guy is not funny, man. He's just not. I watched Talladega Nights a while back, dude. I did not so much as giggle. And at the end, I thought, man, I would like my 2 hours back. That is 2 hours of my life that I would never recover. I thought that was some really dumb shit. That was
funny as hell. What are you talking about?
That movie was. The last time that Will Ferrell was funny was in Old School. Not John C. Reilly, that guy's funny. But like Will Ferrell, he's funny when the other people around him make him funny. He's not funny.
Kevin Hart's not funny.
No, Kevin Hart's funny.
He's like half. I seen him on Saturday Night Live last week. I was like, man, this is an embarrassment to all black comedians out there. I mean, he's just...
It
was a struggle to watch it.
He's not funny anymore?
Who?
Cat Williams. He used to be funny. He was funny the first time. But I don't think he's funny anymore. It's over, dude. Your shit has moved on, little micro mini pimp. Go. You know, it ain't funny no more. It was funny the first time, but it's...
You're not
going to
sit up here and
diss me,
okay?
No, it was funny the first. That's what I'm saying, but it's the same joke. It was funny when he told the joke about the motorcycle. That was the funniest thing he ever said, dude, about the first time he rode his motorcycle, and it was raining outside, and he was trying to ride down the line, and it was, like, spinning on top of him, and the dude was like, you can ride, you're going to fall. Now, that was funny. That was funny, but you can't just keep telling the same joke over and over again. I'm a pill. You know what I'm saying? Man, tell us something really funny that happened in your life. That's why Chris Rock is funny. Because it's all stuff that we share.
You know, you get a gimmick and you roll with it, man. Like I said, comedy is competitive, man. A lot of people don't realize it, but, the last tour that Eddie did, Let Me Explain.
Mm-hmm.
I seen Let Me Explain live in person. And then when I went to the movies, I'm like, oh, wait a minute,
minute, he did this already. But me being a comedian, knowing what comedy is without it, but, you know.
And let me explain what's this. Boy, shit, man. I mean, the one that came out before that where he was talking about his dad with the no drawers on. Now, when I saw that movie too, that shit had me crying my ass off, man. But know what she let me explain when he was at the Madison Square Garden. I just couldn't get into it. I was like, gosh, man, it let me down. You know what I'm saying? I was expecting to get busted over the head again.
I think that's the difference between like a gimmick, you know, like a Cat Williams has got a gimmick, man, and that's fine, and that got him his 15 minutes, maybe 20, but like a guy that's gonna last a long time, the Eddies and the Chris Rocks and I'll go back, you know, Richard Pryor. The thing is, those guys talked about things that we all share, you know, things that's going on in the world, things that happen in everybody's family, things that happen with everybody's people. It's not about pimp jokes. It's not about, you know, God knows, I think Chris Tucker is funny, but, you know, even he stopped joking about smoking weed eventually because, like, you can only make so many smoking weed jokes. You know, there's only so much just funny about the same thing. But them guys that last a long time, man, they talk, they appeal to what we all have in common. And that kind of goes back to, you know, to the beginning of the show tonight, is that ultimately entertainment, is, if it's universal, that's what it, you know, what entertains all of us is the best entertainment. And you know, maybe it ain't all just about ratchetness. Maybe we need to try to entertain everybody.
I'm trying to remember where the Jackson when I learned my comedy mentors used when I was growing up with being original and originality. You know, you want to pick. You don't want to talk about the weirdest stuff and try and make it funny. You pick the simplest thing, the most common thing, and that's what makes everything fucking funny. You know, I don't have to be talking about all, you know, I found it, and then it just smelled like Vaseline and
I know you want to leave me, Lillian. But I refuse to let you go. You know, that's funny, man, because we've all seen Dad get drunk, and this is my motherfucking house. And if you don't like it, you'll be a 7-year-old homeless dog walking motherfucker. Hey, you know, we've all been at the party with the grown-ups drinking, the, you know. Yeah, man, you know, but yeah, they stuck their hands in the leg and they come up with the bitch. You know, but yeah, I mean, we've all had the hairy uncle and the great big auntie who falls down the stairs, and you know, and that's what's funny, because we all have it in common. You know, we all have our shared experience, and it's the funniest guys are the people who aren't afraid to talk about it.
I kind of talk about a little bit of what I learned. I don't talk about, I'm broke and I'm poor. I kind of got a joke like that. But I just knew I was poor when my house got broken into. And they didn't take my, they wouldn't let me sticky notes talk about me. Well, you know, you on that shit in here.
That's
good
shit.
Like crazy stuff, man. I talked about when I was growing up with my dad. How cheap my dad was. Like, this is how cheap my dad was. I had an older brother, but I never really got new clothes for school. I just got hand-me-downs. You know, I walked in the house one day. My dad talked about, hey, son, I found your eighth grade picture. I say, Dad, what you talking about? I'm only in fifth. He said, oh, well, take a look at this, because this is what you're going to look like when you get in eighth grade. I'm like, you know what? Anyways,
oh man, that's some good shit, because I got brothers and I've been through that, you know. Oh man, that's good shit.
That's the stuff I talk about, baby.
You know, it's like, you know, times are hard when you come home and somebody's broken your house and they're eating your food. You get that in your house and all they got in was your refrigerator? Times are hard.
Right, Tim.